it wasn't either of the people who recorded it, and there was nobody else in that wing of the building, so we don't really know what that was. But yeah, it was this kind of growl.
Welcome to Paranormal Isles. I'm your host, Angus King. Join me as I explore supernatural occurrences in Aotearoa, New Zealand.
To be quite honest, it's got me stumped. I cannot explain it, and both of us saw the same thing.
Oh, I mean, there was a time many years ago that if you ask me, do I believe in ghosts or do ghosts exist? And I would say, well, I really don't know. I don't know. But now I can with confidence say, yeah, they do. They do exist.
This podcast contains paranormal themes and true life atrocities and may not be suitable for all listeners. Discretion is advised. In this episode, we are joined by paranormal experts Mark Wallbank from Haunted Auckland and Barbara Casely from Haunted New Zealand. We thank them for sharing their first-hand experiences. Unlike our previous locations of the supernatural being confined inside four walls, what if a whole area, in this case an entire coastline, be a cursed and ghostly realm? A region of such haunting beauty and overwhelming power, forged with tragedy, mystery, and legend. A place where time literally stands still. Join me as we explore Whatipu and the Coast of Ghosts. On the west coast of New Zealand's North Island, at the southern tip of the Waitakere Ranges, you'll find a remote beach named Whatipu. It's a dichotomy, with its wild, unspoiled natural beauty, walking hand in hand with a rugged, desolate loneliness. Awash with its dazzling black sand, a testament to the country's violent volcanic past. It has a mysterious feeling, as a place that changes with the tides. With its relentless winds and the ruthless Tasman Sea perpetually pounding the shore, the shifting sands have caused the beach to expand more than 6 square kilometres in the last 80 years. Whatipu and the area of the coast leading up to Mercer Bay and Piha has a history that is as dark as its sands. It's hard to believe that just over the ranges, less than an hour away, is the hustle and bustle of Auckland City. But when you leave there and pass through the Waitakere bush and enter this prehistoric landscape, you literally feel as if you could be the last soul left alone on this planet. The first evidence of Whatipu being occupied by the Maori is in the 1200s. To this day, physical proof can be seen etched into the landscape, like pā or defence fortifications, the area being perfect due to the staggering high ridgelines. There were times of peace and times of bloody intertribal battles. The coastline has a multitude of caves, which the Maori use for many purposes, including shelter, and also refuge during the New Zealand colonial wars in the 19th century. There are many Maori legends associated with the area. One of the most famous is the tragic story of Hinirangi, just up the coast of Mercer Bay. She was the daughter of a Maori chief, whose beloved husband was swept out to his death into the unforgiving Tasman Sea whilst fishing off the rocks. For weeks she sat atop the cliffs waiting for his return. She died not long after of a broken heart. So strong was her despair, it is said her mournful figure is eternally embedded in the rock face of the cliffs of Mercer Bay, which is clearly visible from certain angles, particularly in the light of dawn. Sir Bob Harvey, the former mayor of the Waitakere region, believes the whole area has a haunted history and has seen her distinctive face numerous times. He is quoted on saying, "The whole place is steeped in tragedy and legend." In February 1863, the Royal Navy's Australian flagship, the HMS Orpheus, sank at the Manukau Harbour, south of Whatipu. Of the 259 souls aboard, 189 died during the shipwreck, making it New Zealand's worst maritime tragedy in history.
I mean, yeah, well, it's a beautiful area, beautiful. But there has been a lot of disaster there along that coastline. A lot of deaths, a lot of suicides, people have jumped the cliffs. There was a shipwreck, the Orpheus, ran aground there many years ago. And a lot of young sailors that were learning how to sail, a lot of them were just teenagers, young adults, all drowned. And 2 weeks after the ship had run aground, bodies were still washing up on the shore, you know, 2 weeks later. And a lot of them, they just buried them where they found them because there was just so many of them. So there's a lot of tragedy there along that whole coastline.
On the day the Orpheus sank, the captain used an outdated chart that did not account for the shifting sandbanks of Futtipu Beach. When they realised their error, it was too late and they failed to steer the vessel to safety. In fact, their desperate attempt to change course placed the ship's port side against the breaking waves. The window was shattered. Hatches burst open as the Orpheus became engulfed with water. Some crew members jumped overboard, hoping to escape the wreckage, but they were swept away in the current. A steamship in Manukau Harbour, the Wongawanga, approached the Orpheus, hoping to save desperate survivors clinging to the rigging as the decking became submerged. In the tradition of the Royal Navy, the sailors sang to keep their spirits up, with the sound of their voices carrying across the water onto the land where witnesses could hear them. Then the mast collapsed, killing most of the sailors who were still on board, and the singing faded. The Wongawanga spent the entire night picking dead bodies out of the water and transporting them to the beach where they were buried. Most of the sailors aboard the Orpheus were trainees, between 12 and 18 years old, only kids. Many had clung to the doomed mast for safety before it snapped, as they couldn't swim. While the Admiralty blamed the harbour pilot and the signalman for the wreckage, the local Māori believed there was something else at play. The day before the Orpheus tragedy, a European settler had chopped down a puriri tree for wood. This evergreen native plant was considered sacred to the Māori people, tapu. Local tribes believed it was because of this desecration of their tapu that the Orpheus sank. With the multitude of young lives lost, bodies who were left to decompose right there on the beach, it should come as no surprise that some spirits choose to linger at Futtipu Beach. To this day, there are reports of the sounds of guttural screams being carried along in the wind with no apparent source. This treacherous area has between 1848 and 1981 sunk a record total of 18 ships and snatched 244 lives. In the years following the Orpheus shipwreck, local communities tried to return to some form of normality. In the latter half of the 19th century, Futtipu was the main area for Auckland's booming logging industry, the Gibbons family establishing a mill providing jobs for many local people. In 1870, mill manager Nicholas Gibbons built a homestead overlooking Futtipu Beach. At this coastal outpost, a sense of togetherness strengthened the community, and they often got together socially. The caves along the coast made for perfect party venues.
There are also some interesting caves as well. There's the old big dance floor cave, which used to be a lot of old dances were held there. They call it the dance floor cave because a lot of the locals used to gather there. All the kids would gather there on a Friday or a Saturday night and have parties. They still do. They still gather there and have parties there at the moment. But it's they used to have a big... The ground was covered in staging. It was covered in timber, and they would have bands playing, and just kids would get together and hook up and all that. And it was sneak away at night and have a party.
Since the 1890s, Ballroom Cave, overlooking Manukau Harbour, has hosted many dances and parties. Back in the day, people donned their best clothes and walked for miles, some arriving on horseback. Inside, the cave was illuminated with coloured lights and decorated with ferns. An accordion band played, with music bouncing joyfully off the smooth interior walls. Friends chatted and laughed together as couples danced closely on the kauri wood dance floor, while some disappeared into dark corners.
It's quite interesting, just the sounds you hear there. You can actually hear voices and you can hear sounds. You'll be there all alone and you'll be hearing echoes of just people and sounds. whether it's just the sound of the ocean, because you've got the ocean just out the front there. When you know, when you hear the stories of what's going on there, and then you start hearing the sounds echoing around the coastline, it's quite amazing. It's a beautiful place, but it's very eerie. In that cave alone, I mean, we've heard voices, we've heard, we've seen shadows and interesting things like that, but it's thought that people are still frequenting the cave. Also, a lot of the Maori used to use that those caves to sort of store things in and hide away and keep an eye out on the water to see who was approaching out in the harbour. So people lived in them at some point. There have been good moments where people have used it, used the area for living. That's where they would live, in that area. They also died in that area.
The centre of Whaitapu, Gibbons Homestead, has also seen its share of tragedy over time. Most of Nicholas and Matilda Gibbons' 8 children moved away from the area, except the second son, Fred, and his wife Laura, who took over the family home. As Fred and Matilda's grandson wrote, "At one time in the early years of the 20th century, when Fred and Laura Gibbons had a young family, all 8 of their children contracted the dreaded childhood infection diphtheria. At Whaitapu there was no doctor or medical help, and the parents were desperate. Fred took the worst affected children in a flat-bottom dinghy and rowed them to Cornwallis, where they proceeded by cart and boat to the hospital at Auckland. Apparently, he kept a fire burning aboard the boat on a piece of corrugated iron to try to keep the patients warm. He had to battle against the tide, and the journey took 14 hours. One of the children died on the journey, and another died in hospital the following day. The Gibbons family sold the lodge in 1929, and it changed owners a couple of times over the years, and is now privately managed under license from Auckland Council. If you were to visit the area today, chances are you'll end up staying at Whaitapu Lodge. A collection of buildings gather around the original Gibbons homestead, where holidaymakers have been staying for more than 100 years. And the history is tangible when you stand face to face with the portraits of Nicholas and Matilda Gibbons. Mark and the team from Haunted Auckland have visited the area many times. During one particular investigation, they filmed a bedroom door opening and closing by itself more than once, with no human explanation for it. To view the video of their overnight stay, find a link in the show notes of this episode. The homestead's resident ghost is the so-called Pink Lady, who is believed to be the ghost of Matilda Gibbons. What makes her apparitions curious is that she has been known to appear in broad daylight. Those who have seen the Pink Lady claim that she has a strong resemblance to Matilda Gibbons, whose portrait keeps vigil inside her family home.
I've heard many accounts of the Pink Lady. I believe there is absolutely no doubt that people believe there is a Pink Lady there. People have seen the apparition of a Pink Lady, and some people think they've actually captured a photo. If that is the case, I believe that the Pink Lady is more than likely a thought form formed by all these people who go to Whaitapu expecting to see the Pink Lady.
In recent history, there have been eerie disappearances. Since 1992, 6 people have literally vanished into thin air. Some say they may have fallen from one of the many cliff faces and been washed out to sea. But others, like Sir Bob Harvey, who was also a surf lifesaver for the area for over 64 years, vehemently disagrees, saying that if anyone was to fall from those cliffs, there would be some discernible trace of them. He is quoted saying also that if someone goes into the water of Mercer Bay and drowns, the overwhelming odds point to them being found within 3 to 10 days. Where they are, no one knows. But with the region being unnervingly encased in such dense bush, they may never be found. It's like the Waitakere's has literally swallowed them up. It's no wonder Sir Harvey named the area the Coast of Ghosts. Whaitapu is also tragically a graveyard for beached whales. Maori history tells of whales over the centuries that were washed up were considered a great gift from the sea. Over the last 150 years, there have been numerous mass beachings. What makes the hauntings at Whaitapu so interesting is the fact that all of the locations have been etched with human life and loss. The historic homestead, the former ballroom cave, The ocean with the tragic sinking of the Orpheus. The beach where the bodies were laid to rest. The most recent unexplained disappearances. History, myth, and legend all converge in the singular location. It is a Maori belief that when someone dies, their spirit travels north along the coast, over the windswept vista of Cape Reinga to the headland, from where spirits travel underwater to their eternal home. The entire coastline thus forms a highway of spirits, with a constant unseen movement of souls to the afterlife. In a place like Whatipu, however, where the physical world seems to blend into the supernatural world, this passage of spirits can be observed, sometimes so clearly it's almost palpable.
I wonder if it's a little bit like whatever's happening at the Bermuda Triangle. I've read accounts and heard an account also of people who are walking around Whatipu, you know, a little way from the beach, but can still hear the beach and the surf and the birds and everything. And then they suddenly walk into an area which feels completely different, really eerie, and completely silent. They can no longer hear the surf or the rustling of the grasses. They can't hear the birds. It's apparently completely silent. They stop. They're like, what is going on here? They'll keep walking, and then poof, it'll suddenly all the sounds come back again.
As the sands shift with the passage of time, spirits and ghosts float with the easterly winds. The rugged, unspoilt landscape offers a mystical allure. With the mesmerizing, ferocious ocean in front of you, and the hauntingly beckoning bush behind, to stand on the shore, you feel the extreme forces of the polar opposites literally paralyzing you. Once in its grip, Whatipu will not let you go. Knowing the pain and peril suffered in these treacherous waters and on these dark sands, would you dare visit there? Thank you for listening to Paranormal Isles. Myself and co-creator Sonia Lowe look forward to bringing you more episodes.